Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're going to have some fun today talking about the future of space travel and what a future vacation in space might look like. And a couple of guests for you. We'll be talking with Olivia Kosky and Jane Gersovich. They are the authors, Jana Gersovich. They are the authors of the new book, Vacation Guide to the Solar System. And it's packed with some fun advice, but also some serious science and thoughts on the future of real-life space travel. So that's our topic to begin the show, and I hope you'll join in with your own questions. If you could travel anywhere in the solar system, where would you go? Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. Olivia Kosky, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me. Very excited to be here.
Oh, and Jana Gersovich, I'm telling you, thanks for coming.
Thank you for having us.
I'm telling you, I had so much fun going through your book. Have you guys read Saturn Run by John Sanford?
I haven't.
Oh, John Sanford's book?
Mm-mm.
Oh, it's about a race to Saturn between the U.S. and the Soviet Union, Russia, and they tried to, it's a sort of a futuristic, what our science would be like, 50 years ahead.
That sounds fascinating.
Amazing. Yeah, there's actually a NASA program in the 1960s to put humans into orbit around Saturn, and NASA did a lot of studies. There's a book called Project Orion that details that effort. So, yeah, there's science fiction and there's science nonfiction, and I'd like to think this book kind of exists at the space between those.
Yeah, I think you're right. I thought about Saturn Run quite a bit because they went to great pains. He wrote with another guy, an astronomer, and they went to great pains to get the science as right as they could around this fiction story. And that's kind of what you guys have here with your vacation guide. You really tried hard to get things right.
Yeah, our approach, is to kind of, it's fanciful in that obviously people are not taking space vacations and won't be for some time. But in terms of the human experience, what a human would experience, what they would see, how everyday human activities, when translated into space, how those would change, we really tried to base that in science. Whether it's, our knowledge of these worlds that you'd be visiting or the physics of existing in microgravity, low gravity, high gravity environments. So it's a lot of fun to think about.
Well, I would think so. And, you have some good background here. Jana, you've worked as an astronomer and a space educator.
Mm-hmm.
Olivia, you're head of operations at Gorilla Science. So you guys know a little bit about what you're talking about, I think.
Yeah, and Olivia also has a background in engineering. So it was fun to kind of come at it, my background more from the astronomy side of things and hers from the engineering background. And so it was a good compliment.
Oh, and it's so much fun to read. I tell you, I had a lot of fun reading this book. And of course, now I've jumbled all of the planets and all of the different things that, in my mind. I thought I should have been writing all this down when I was reading through it. But it was a lot of fun. How did you come up? I mean, did you just, you're sitting around having a beer one night, and is that how it went, or what?
It's close to that, but this organization, Gorilla Science, where I work, created something called the Intergalactic Travel Bureau. So our organization creates these experiences to spark conversations with the public about science and how science affects people's everyday lives. And so we had to create an experience for this party in London called the Royal Astronomers Ball. And we thought, gosh, it'd be fun to plan people's space
space vacations and imagine, you know, what it would take to go on a trip to Pluto, go skiing on Pluto, what would that be like? And so that's where it started. And Jana and I met through the Intergalactic Travel Bureau. So I was producing the first event here in New York at an arts festival, and I was recruiting astronomers. So Jana answered this call to an email.
Yeah, basically I was procrastinating in writing my PhD thesis, and I got an email saying, would you like to plan some space vacations? And so I obviously couldn't say no to that, and that's how I got involved in the project.
Yeah, I remember that procrastinating on writing my own dissertation. I could think of all kinds of things to do other than write work on it. Oh, man. Kevin in Two Rivers, are you with us?
Yeah, that's Two Harbors.
Two Harbors, sorry. Two Harbors, Minnesota.
Yep.
So, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I'd like to go to Saturn to see the rings of Saturn.
Yes.
The Huygens expedition was pretty extraordinary, and they discovered the hexagonal patterns over the North and South Poles, and that'd be fun to see.
Yeah, well, talk a little bit about that vacation in Saturn then, Jana. Do you want to do that or Olivia? Jana?
There's some, obviously the rings of Saturn are the first thing that people think about. And some people might think that it's this solid ring, but it's made up of all of these particles of many different sizes of rock and ice. And some of them are just dust, and others are as big as a building. And so you could imagine orbiting around with all of those particles being a part of the rings itself, and you would get some really amazing views. There are moons of Saturn that orbit within the gaps themselves of the rings, and the gravity from these moons creates ripples in the rings. So there's these amazing photographs from the Cassini mission to Saturn where you can see these vertical ripples and kind of spokes that form because of the gravitational dynamics. And I just imagine seeing that up close would be really a truly amazing experience. And you also mentioned the hexagon on Saturn, and this was a huge surprise when it was discovered. It's over the North Pole, and it's rounded in shape, but very clearly a geometric shape. And they think that it's formed from the different layers of gas orbiting in different ways, and so they've been able to kind of recreate similar patterns in the laboratory, but to actually go there and to go into the hexagon itself and to see that up close, I would love to do that.
But as you talk about in your book, you need a fair amount of vacation time.
Yeah. Absolutely.
What is it? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, it's fine. Yeah, we basically judge how long it would take to get to these places based on how long it has taken probes. Now, if humans were going to travel, I'm sure we would have different technologies, and we'd also be very interested in shortening the trip a little bit. But if you're going to Saturn, you're definitely going to want to budget at least a decade to get there and back, plus the time you want to spend there. So getting that time off of work might be a little bit difficult.
I've only got a day to spend on Saturn because I'm running out of vacation time.
Exactly.
Oh,
turn
boy.
Around and come back home. Yeah, it's a little bit complicated to calculate your journey to these destinations because the Earth is moving and your vacation destination is moving as well. So that's a challenge in space vacationing that you don't have on Earth because Italy isn't going to go anywhere if you're planning a trip there. but you have to know your orbital dynamics in order to make sure you arrive.
And so there you go, Kevin. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And, if you're going to spend a year there, if you go by the Saturn year, what is it, something like 29 Earth years?
Yeah, I don't remember offhand, but it's much, much longer. So that's an interesting thing, is you can think about how long years are on different planets. Of course, we just define a year as how long it takes that planet to orbit around the sun. So in the case of Mercury, you'd be going around, you know, about four times each time the Earth goes once around. So for the planets that are interior, closer to the sun than Earth, their years are going to be much shorter. But as you go into the outer solar system, the year becomes very, very long. So kids are always really interested when you tell them they could celebrate several Mercurian birthdays for every Earth birthday they have.
Yeah, the Mercury year is only 88 Earth days long, and the day on Mercury is actually quite a bit longer than Earth's day. It's, you know, over 4,000 hours long, and so because of that, you can actually celebrate your birthday, a few times in Earth year.
And here I am getting confused about which planet does which thing, but
if that doesn't confuse you more, yeah.
Well, Mercury, tell us what ways would we have to travel once we hit there?
Well, yeah, Mercury's. Go ahead,
Jana.
Oh,
you want to
yeah.
do?
Sure. Yeah, Mercury is. It's a really difficult place to stay alive. I'm going to be honest. It's one of the locations that, you know, I think it would be difficult to think about how humans would actually survive in practice. But if you were to be able to survive there on the surface, there's an area that's the boundary between the lit side and the dark side. It's called the Terminator. So this is where if you were standing on Mercury, you would be experiencing a sunrise or a sunset. And on Earth, that line moves very, very quickly over the surface. But on Mercury, because of its relatively slow rotation, you could actually walk along with the sunset or the sunrise. It's only moving at about 2.2 miles per hour, so you could experience this eternal sunset. And, of course, you'd want to be on the dark side to avoid all that radiation and heating from the sun. And so you'd want to outrun the sun coming at you.
I laughed when I saw that in your book. That was really that was really fun. Oh man. Talking today with Olivia Koski and Jana Gersovich, and they are Olivia heads operations at Gorilla Science, creates events and installations for festivals, museums, galleries, and a whole lot more. Jana Gersovich has worked as an astronomer and science educator at the American Museum of Natural History, hosts shows at the Hayden Planetarium. She received her undergraduate degrees in astronomy, physics, and mathematics at the UW-Madison.
It's true.
Well, you know, we have a couple of meteorologists coming up after you guys are off. And you might have even John Martin and Steve Ackerman from Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. So you may have even had a class from them at one time or another, Jana. Oh, man. I don't know. But let's give our listeners a chance to join in. If you got a question about one of the planets or about what it would be like to maybe go on vacation to Mars or even the moon. I guess it was me. I'd go with the moon just because it's quicker.
But yeah.
Join in.
Not so much vacation time required.
Yeah. Join in. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Or go ahead and post a question or comment on our Facebook page titled The Larry Mehler Show. I'm Larry Mehler, Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. Coming up at 11:45, it's our monthly check-in with the weather guys, Steve Ackerman and John Martin. We'll talk about the big heat wave in the western U.S. and, of course, a whole lot more. But right now, we're planning your vacation guide to the solar system with our two guests, Olivia Koski and Jana Gersovich, who are co-authors of the book Vacation Guide to the Solar System. And it's pretty much everything. Well, I don't know if it's everything, but it's sure a whole lot of what you'd find when you visited any of the planets and their moons, and kind of what you'd have to do to kind of get around when you were on those planets. It's really a lot of fun, and it's written like a vacation guide, so that makes it all the more fun. And, you know, I'm going to sit down with my 13-year-old daughter, and we're going to go through the book, because I think it'd be really a fun book for youngsters as well as oldsters. Don't you, Jenna?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think there's something, you know, that's kind of what captured my imagination when I was in middle school was science fiction. And that's how I got interested in science and in physics in particular. And so I think that, you know, my hope is that kids will read this book and imagine themselves going on space vacations. And then who knows, someday maybe some of them might be able to travel to places like the moon or Mars.
Yeah, it would be great. I'm too old for that. I'll be long gone when that is a reality, but maybe not my daughter, you know, 13.
Well, especially, you know, you look at a place like the moon, and we've been planning space vacations for about 5 years now. We've planned thousands of vacations. And in that short time, you know, we've really seen a lot of advancements in the private space industry. And, you know, there's two people have bought tickets to go to the moon within the next few years from SpaceX and Elon Musk. And, you know, we'll see if they make it there. But, you know, there are lots of private companies that are very serious about bringing people on these trips. And what sort of began for us as this, you know, whimsical, fun experience that has a lot of science in it is actually turning into reality as we see these companies make progress towards those goals.
Yeah. Cool. Kevin in Prentice, we'll give you a shot. Thank you for calling, Kevin. What's on your mind?
Well, my 6-year-old son and I are listening to the program and find it fascinating and fantastic. We have a question regarding a planet that has ice geysers that shoot out of it.
Mm.
And my son is calling it Selenus. Is that... Can you shed some light on that?
Yeah, so there's a moon of Saturn called Enceladus, and it's a completely amazing place. It has these, as you mentioned, these huge geysers. Because of the low gravity and lack of atmosphere, they shoot very, very high above you. And if you were there, you'd kind of see them arc out into this giant umbrella shape above you, and that water would freeze into little ice particles and kind of shimmer as it was coming down. And some of that ice is never going to make it back down to the surface of that moon. It actually shoots off of the moon and becomes a part of Saturn's rings. So the very outermost ring of Saturn, the E ring, is created primarily from these particles that have been shooting out of this geyser of this moon of Saturn.
Well, Kevin, you know, you've got me interested. Of course, I don't have the vacation time for it anyway, but Saturn would definitely be high on my list, and those ice geysers sound really, really cool. There are some other cool things out there. As you wrote about the various places, the planets and the moons, what are some of the most spectacular things that we would see? I mean, everything would be spectacular, I guess, but the ice geysers would certainly be.
It's amazing when you think about the places that you can go, places like Saturn. It's a gas planet, so you wouldn't actually be standing on the surface of
it.
But these gas giants have incredible moons, and it's really the moons that you'll be visiting. So Jupiter has over 60 moons. It has, I think, 67 moons.
They found two more recently, actually. They're at 69 now.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, there's dozens of moons, and there are these moons called the Galilean moons, which were discovered by Galileo. And they're just amazing in their extreme. You know, you find extreme environments on them. So this moon Io is covered in volcanoes, and then there's another moon not too far from that called Europa, which is covered in ice. And if you drill down through the ice, scientists think that there's a liquid water ocean beneath that thick layer of ice, and that there could possibly be even microbial life there. So, you know, if it were up to me, I'd probably go visit the moons of Jupiter, although the radiation levels around that planet are quite high and dangerous to humans. But the auroras on Jupiter, the northern lights, that as we know them on Earth, are just incredible on Jupiter because it has such a powerful magnetic field. They're these glowing purple lights that you see at the poles.
And Kevin, thanks a lot for calling. I'm thinking, you know, songs were running through my mind, and now with the, you know, I'll be looking at the moons, but I'll be seeing you in the moons.
Yeah, the view of Jupiter from one of its moons, I think, would just be incredible because Jupiter is so enormous. You know, imagine standing on our own moon and seeing the Earth from our own moon. I think that would be incredible. But then to think about, you know, standing on a distant moon and seeing, you know, the swirling storms of Jupiter, which are just gorgeous. You know, it'd be hard to think of a view that would rival that here on Earth.
Oh, for sure. Well, Kevin, thanks again. Let's go to Mike in Madison next. Mike, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Larry. So I have a background in aerospace and physics, and what I'd love to hear about is some talk about how you're going to get to these wonderful places, particularly the difference between regular rocket engines and maybe ion propulsion. Do you ever discuss that in the book?
You know, yeah, we talk about it a little bit. We do gloss over a lot of the technologies that are required to visit some of these places. But you know, the traditional rockets. You think about traditional chemical rockets and the times it would take to visit a place like Pluto. I think, you know, for human missions, we're definitely going to need to explore other technologies. I think, you know, ion propulsion has a lot of potential, but, you know, is not quite there yet. We don't spend a lot of time on the technology.
Yeah, maybe, and it also depends. Yeah, it also depends too. We don't quite know the timescales that it would be reasonable for humans to exist in interplanetary space. You know, there's a lot of radiation effects that, for example, astronauts that are on the International Space Station are protected from. But on these longer journeys between planets, we'll have to see how humans can deal with those environments for longer periods of time, and also just develop technologies that allow a sustainable and enclosed environment for those longer periods of time if those are necessary. And the more we can do to advance, you know, technology, like the rocket technology, in order to be able to get us there faster, the more likely it is that we'll have a successful human mission.
There'd probably have to be some sort of space station where the ships were built, maybe out in space, or hauled up there in pieces, and built to, just to, you'd save a lot of power, because what did you talk about, just getting from Earth to the moon, I forget what the thrust and how many thousands of, just to get out of our atmosphere.
Yeah, it's something, you know, like 20,000 miles per hour just to escape Earth's gravity.
Yeah, it's amazing. Mike, thank you very much for calling. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Again, you can email us at ideas@WPR.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You know, there's, a certain romantic aspect to this idea of space travel. But in reality, how unromantic and harsh is it?
Yeah, it's not pretty, right? you know, it's just very difficult to be a human
in this completely unnatural environment, right? This enclosed space. You have to recycle all of your water and all that that entails. I mean, you know, simple hygiene and going to the bathroom is a challenge in these different environments. And so it's not going to be glamorous, at least, not for a long while.
Imagine going on a road trip across the U.S. and not stopping and making sure you bring everything that you need to eat, and, you know, having to go to the bathroom in the vehicle that you're traveling in. I think space is a much more extreme version of that, where there are no rest stops in space.
Did you watch, did you see the movie, was it Matt Damon's movie on Mars? Was it the Alien?
Yeah, the Martian.
Oh, the Martian, that was it. Did you see that movie? And
I read the book and watched the movie, and I loved both of them. I think there's some very realistic aspects of it, it gets things more right than a lot of other movies. One thing that was a little bit exaggerated was the windstorm on Mars.
Wow.
So there's a lot of wind and there's a lot of dust on Mars, and so you have frequent dust storms. But the wind, well, there is wind on Mars. There's not much of an atmosphere. It's definitely nothing like here on Earth. It's, maybe only 1% of what we have here. So the winds would not be so strong that they would blow you over, except in a very, very extreme case. And so the windstorm that kind of, I don't want to spoil anything, but there's a windstorm in the movie. And it was like quite a bit stronger than I think a real windstorm that you might experience on Mars would be.
Didn't you talk in the book, I was trying to remember if it was Mars, but it, just in terms of flight, once you, let's say you landed there because of the atmosphere, it's kind of difficult, in terms of getting lift or anything to move from one part to the
Yeah. So, here on Earth, we use airplanes, but that requires air in order to get lift. So it might be possible. You have to have a very different design for an aircraft traveling in different types of atmosphere, and cases where there is no atmosphere, it would be impossible. But there are some places, for example, Titan, which is a moon of Saturn, it has an extremely thick atmosphere, so that's very unusual for a moon. And it would be very easy to sustain flight from an aircraft there. And not only flight from an aircraft, but if you had a wingsuit, a human could become airborne under their own power on Titan because of the low gravity and the very, very dense atmosphere.
I kind of like that idea. That was a dream I had as a kid, that I would be flying, and I would be able to jump and fly over our house for some reason. And then I would land and wake up.
You could very well do that on certain moons with low gravity. You could jump as high as a tall building.
Well, Ben in Lanesboro, Minnesota is up next. Ben, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for having the show. I'm enjoying it very much. I'm an old kid wishing that he could have gone on space programs and all that. And I'm reminded of NASA's series of posters. I'm sure your authors must be aware of the series of posters they did within the last several years, giving depictions of what it might be like on the surfaces of some of these exoplanets they've been discovering. Just a beautiful series of interpretations done in the WPA-style 1930s-era artwork of Come Out West in America. And they're just beautiful, like travelogue posters. And I wonder if they've seen those posters.
Mm.
Yeah, we've definitely seen them. And the art in our book, it has a very similar spirit to that of imagining these vacations and having these sort of whimsical depictions of your vacations on other planets. And the artist that we worked with on the book is Steve Thomas. He's from Minnesota. And he's been a really wonderful collaborator with us, and just very talented. And, there's a lot of different artists out there who, you know, take inspiration from old advertisements, and, you know, they're sort of harking back to the day when travel, you know, was this glamorous thing, you know, especially like in the times of early airplane travel. So yeah, we love that NASA art.
Yeah, and it's fun to kind of mix that old style with trying to create a realistic depiction of what it would be look like to travel to some of these places. And in many cases, like for example, we have at the beginning of each chapter, we have kind of this full page poster style image. So for Saturn, we have someone meditating in orbit around the hexagon, and that's based on a real image from a space probe that visited Saturn, Cassini, of course, not the meditating person. But we have many instances where we've kind of taken a cue from the real view you could get in space, and kind of imagine how humans would interact with a view like that.
Yeah.
And it's so important, you know, for artists to work with scientists to sort of help people imagine these things. I think those NASA posters have done a lot to you know, get people interested in space and sort of, you know, have fun imagining what it might be like to visit some of these places.
Yeah, you should. I tell you, I love the sort of post. They really are kind of like posters at the start of each chapter. You should sell those as posters. They're just beautiful, and they're in this that kind of older style that I just love. So there you go, Ben. You're gonna have to take a look at the book and
yeah.
Compare.
I guess I gotta buy it.
compare the. Yeah, you should at least take a look and compare those posters against the NASA posters that you were talking about. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Well, what would you say to someone who's skeptical that humans should be exploring the idea of space travel?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Olivia.
Well, we talk to a lot of people who are skeptical. Do you mean skeptical that it's possible or that we should even be doing it?
That we should even be doing it. Longer thought on that one.
Yeah. Yeah, Jana, you take this one.
Yeah, so, I think that we've had incredible success lately, with missions that have been exploring other planets. As I mentioned, Cassini going to Saturn and New Horizons, which traveled past Pluto, and we made huge advances in our knowledge of that dwarf planet. And I think that there's a lot to be gained from scientifically from sending probes, but I do think that there's something unique about sending humans into space and having them describe their experiences. You know, perhaps at this point, it's not important to, for instance, the survival of the human race, because we don't have the technological capability at this point to colonize other worlds. But I think that there's a human experience that people get very, very excited about, that spurs people to be more interested in science, to kind of imagine the possibilities of humans in space far longer down the line. 100 years ago, air travel was new, and now, you know, it's everybody travels in planes, and that to somebody 100 years ago would be an amazing experience. And how they imagined travel in space back then was, you know, so very different and so limited compared to how we view it now. So 100 years down the line, you know, who knows where we'll be at in terms of that. And so to get started on it early, it, you know, just expands the possibilities of when we'll get to that point.
Yeah, it's fun. It's beyond our imagination, I think, what it will be like 100 years from now. Don't you think? I mean,
yeah.
I think we can. It's easy for us to imagine the solar system because we've sent all of these missions to various places. So, you know, writing the book in that sense was easy because we have this wealth of information from NASA. We have imagery from various agencies around the world. But going to an exoplanet, for example, even though they, you know, they've discovered Earth-like planets orbiting distant stars, but there's still a lot of speculation on exactly what those places look like. But 100 years from now, we might know a lot more.
Yeah. Well, I've got to ask you both, and you may have different answers. After writing this book, learning about all the wild stuff out there in space, which destination in the solar system would be your go-to vacation spot, Jana?
Oh, yes. I would have to say Titan, which is that moon of Saturn where you could fly in the atmosphere. But not only because of that amazing fact, but also it has rivers and lakes and seas not made of water, but of liquid methane and ethane. So this is a very, very cold moon, hundreds of degrees below zero Fahrenheit. But I just imagine you could go boating in those lakes. You'd sit very high in the liquid. You could go flying over them. There's also these amazing dark dunes, sand dunes that encircle the equator that are as dark as charcoal and the consistency of granola. And so even though it's a moon, it has all of these varied environments. I think it would be astonishing to be able to visit so many different landscapes just by going to one moon.
Yeah, Olivia, that one's going to, Janice is going to be hard to top.
It is. It really is. But for me, I would go float in the skies of Venus. So, you know, Venus is the hottest planet in the solar system. If you go to this, you probably don't want to go to the surface. It's 800 degrees Fahrenheit there. You know, the pressure is 90 times what it is on the surface of Earth. But 34 miles above the surface of Venus, it's perfectly habitable as long as you bring some air to breathe. But, you know, the atmospheric pressure is similar to Earth. The gravity is similar to Earth. And, you know, if you could construct a floating city filled with air from Earth, I think it would be pretty amazing to float in the skies of Venus.
Oh, well, I tell you what, this is really a fun and interesting. You learn a lot, I think, reading your book, Olivia and Jana, and it's so much fun talking with you today. Thank you so much for being with us. It was really a gas.
Thank you. Yeah, we had fun.
Olivia Koski is the head of operations at Gorilla Science, creates events, installations for festivals, museums, galleries, and a whole lot more. Jana Gersovich is worked as an astronomer, a science educator at the American Museum of Natural History, hosted shows at the Hayden Planetarium, and has her undergraduate degrees in astronomy, physics, and math at the UW-Madison. And their book is a fascinating, fun book. It's called Vacation Guide to the Solar System. They have an intergalactic travel bureau is what they've got. And you get your vacation guide to wherever you want to go in the solar system. It is really fun. And as I said, I'm going to have some fun going through this with daughter Emily and planning our own little trip someplace in the solar system. Well, speaking about our solar system and speaking about let's go back to our own planet. Our weather guys are back with us to talk about some of the extreme heat and a whole lot more. So I hope you'll stay with us. John Martin, Steve Ackerman, coming up next on the Ideas Network.